tape with Hank Mathiasen on November 24th, 1997. So it's really important then for these, for a guy to work with somebody with experience to have that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and we try to do that as much as we can. District man, I'm just going to use Bozeman as an example because we have a district man stationed at Livingston. And I'm not saying this is what's really happening, but this has happened in the past, two examples. Maybe he's going over to Madison County to just maybe visit with local inspectors, or maybe he's going to go over and talk to a rancher about some complaint the rancher wants to talk to him. Maybe he's just hollering about a neighbor not keeping his fence up, or maybe he's complaining because the neighbor's cattle always seem to get over into his place, or his cattle always seem to get over into the neighbor's, or whatever. And so he'd be coming through Bozeman, and if it's a day when things are pretty slow at the market, let's ask the market man, hey, free, ride along. And so the market man will be along just to kind of observe, listen, whatever goes on. And then after the conversation with the rancher is all over with, and maybe they're on their way back, well, shoot questions at this guy. Right. Try to get things straight. Because maybe there was some background that some things that had happened previous that the market man, by just sitting there in on this conversation, isn't getting the whole story. Mm-hmm. But the district man may know it from previous. So it all adds up. Book learning. Well, about the basic book learning you can we always pack a copy of the laws because we cover a lot of things. There's fencing laws in there as well as inspection. And the laws pertaining to ownership and the laws pertaining to the health restrictions, it's all kept in one book. And they do have a handbook. It's a three-ring binder about this same size. It covers a lot of little different things with forms. Like if you find a stray in the country and for some reason or another you cannot locate an owner, the procedure that you have to go through, because you just can't keep this animal forever, you have to sell it, but you got to keep a record of it. And the monies, I had a case, this was out on the other side of the clay soil, there was a heifer showed up out there. This is when I first came up here. And the brand was recorded way down at Billings. So my first thought was, hey, this sucker fell off a truck. Maybe a trip, because at that time there was a lot of cattle going to feedlots in Washington. Earlier days everything went east, but they were just starting to send a lot of cattle to Washington to be fed. This sucker fell off a truck. But so I called Billings and I said, check your ZAs, which is the form that all of the cattle are written out of the yards. When you buy some cattle in the yards, the brand inspector writes out a ZA form that lists all of the sexes and all of the brands of everything that you bought. And that, of course, that has to accompany the truck, but there's a copy kept on file. Check your ZAs for anything of this brand showing up or that might have went through here. Well, had some good help down there, and they went through all of their paperwork down there and said, we can't find anything going that way, but we did have two out of that shipment went to Bozeman, some cow trader, cow jockey, we call them. Bought two of them and took them to Bozeman. So I call the inspector there in Bozeman and say, hey, so-and-so brought in these two. Where did they go to? Well, he checks all of his paperwork, and a day or two later he calls me back. Well, one of them wound up going south or something. He says, the other one went to Butte. Well, so then I called Butte, and they look and they look, and they finally find it. What it was, some guy right here in Helena bought this one lone heifer out of Butte, hauled her out here in the valley, put her in his pasture, and of course, a lone heifer will not stay there. A lot of times a lone steer will, but a heifer won't stay there. And how she got from out here in the valley to all the way out on the other side of Clay Soil without somebody catching her, I'll never know. But I called the guy up that bought her out of Butte. And because first thing I did, you know, after they said, well, this guy in Helena supposedly bought this one, I started checking all of my loss reports. For, in, you know, because these people, they lose something, well, they call the sheriff's office or they call us. You know, hey, I'm short one heifer, or this thing jumped out of a truck or whatever, and shows up, give us a holler. There was no loss report on it. So I called the guy. He says, oh yeah, she's been missing about 3 weeks. And I says, you make a loss report on her? And loss report on her? No, he says, I just figured she'd show up someplace, you know. Gee, from the time I first spotted her until we got him tracked down, I had 3 week feed bills hung up on this critter, you know, and if he'd have filed a report or something, you know. But that's the way things go. That's part of that paperwork. We do run into some real interesting things where people buy something and they won't rebrand it, or they don't get it rebranded, or whatever. It makes it tough to, because our main goal is to get any stray livestock, is to get it back to its rightful owner. But if you say maybe the brand is blotched to the point where you can't decipher exactly what it is, you can't determine it, well, what they do is they'll take pictures, they'll clip this animal, they'll take pictures, they'll write down every chunk of identification that they can, you know, that maybe it's got an ear tag. If it's got an ear tag, you can usually get something. Sometimes you just got a ranch tag that's got, might be a big plastic blue tag with a number on it. Which leads you really nowhere, because in Montana you probably got 100 ranchers using blue tags with numbers on them, right? In the left ear. But you reached a dead end. You can't determine an owner on this thing, and so you have to do something with it. So there's a procedure. After you document everything, you take the animal to town, you sell it through the market for the state of Montana Department of Livestock. The proceeds and all the paperwork is forwarded to Helena. And each year they publish an estray list. And it lists the brands and the animal and where the animal was shipped from. And the money is held here, and if the rightful owner comes forward and offers proof of ownership to our satisfaction, he gets the funds.
And pays whatever the costs are.
Mm-hmm. But there are also a number of them that we never do get owners for. Well, there is a procedure, this was written up many years ago, where after a set time, that money is transferred to the account for the Department of Livestock. And then they use that money to defray expenses. Long drawn out process. Brands inspected, we pretty well covered that. Inspection process is different, Canada versus Wyoming. Not as far as the state is concerned. The only thing is anything from Canada must also meet federal regulations. which we don't directly enforce. They've got their own people that take care of that.
At Customs?
Yeah. There. Yeah, everything coming like across Sweetgrass up there, them trucks, the first place they go to when they come across the border is to the U.S. port of entry. They've got a port right there for livestock. And everything coming in has to stop there. One morning I went up there while I was there. I stayed in Great Falls the night before and drove up there early on a Monday morning. And I got there about 7:30, and the vet doesn't come to work there till 8 o'clock, and there was 47 semis in the parking lot. Waiting.
Unhappy.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Relations between Canada, okay. Stock inspector. We got pretty good relations with Canada and all of them. There, we have various organizations. We have a five-state brand conference, which covers Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Idaho. And we meet once a year in, pick a different state every year. Move this thing around. Gives us a chance to get out of town. It's usually a two-day conference where we exchange information on various crooks. As a matter of fact, I forgot about that one. I don't know all the incidentals on this, but they just, this was on a horse case. A fairly well-known gentleman in South Dakota stole a horse in eastern Montana. They got him. He probably hasn't come to trial yet, so I won't say anything wrong. But the reason for this five-state conference is basically an exchange of information on various suspects, who's operating, exchange information on what kind of vehicles they've been driving, and who's picked up a new girlfriend and she's got a new gooseneck trailer, and things like that.
What to look out for.
Yeah, what to look out for. Cooperation is it. Competition, no. But cooperation is very good. There's also a Western States brand conference, which also includes Alberta and British Columbia. They usually send representatives down to it. But that covers all of the western states west of Mississippi. It's been held at various places, but Reno and Las Vegas, and, okay, and then there's an international that also, that's, their meeting's been held in Baton Rouge. Very, very exotic places. Needless to say, I never did attend any of them, but. Okay, various animals. Okay, llamas and alpacas, sheep. Okay, sheep. Well, first I'll cover the domestic bison and cattle. The cattle, if they're, they basically fall under the cattle end of it, so they'd be inspected the same as cattle. Domestic bison, the provision is there. When they put this provision in, they're not requesting. The law is there that they can do it, but if the bison owners feel that they do have a problem and they want their animals inspected, they want full protection, then we will step in and do it. The law is already in place, but they aren't doing it. Mainly because we haven't had any cases of anybody stealing any bison. We've had a couple of cases where some people have shot bison and got convictions on it. Because that's a felony in Montana. Any domestic livestock, there's no dollar value attached to it.
It's an automatic felony.
An automatic felony. Not a hanging offense. Felony.
So all of the bison are running, for instance, on Turner's ranch, are running without any brands at all.
He has a marking system of his own.
Okay.
I don't believe he's branding any of them, but he does have a marking system. The guy is probably, as far as running a bison operation, he's probably running it as efficiently as possible. Second only to Moise, probably, as far as having an efficient operation. I really didn't want to say that about him. It's true. It is true. Sheep, there again, there is a law in effect, and they do... they don't actually inspect. What they do is they write permits on sheep. Although at markets they will inspect. But what they're doing is they're just keeping track of the movement of sheep. So in other words, if you're hauling a load of sheep from here to Billings or here to Bozeman or maybe to a ranch in White Sulphur, even though the sheep are not inspected per se, you must have a piece of paper that lists, and it's a set form, it's a sheep permit form, that lists the owner, where the sheep were moved from, being moved to, and the exact number of them, and any marks or brands. So if you got somebody that maybe trying to move something illegally, he's not going to have that piece of paper. The honest guy's going to follow the law. It's the dishonest guy that's not going to. But it's a way that everybody, if you're on the road hauling livestock, you've got to have a piece of paper. And also on that piece of paper, you certify that you are the owner of each and every animal on that load.
So the owner of the sheep goes to the stock inspector the same way a cattle owner would.
Yep.
Says, here's what I'm going to do.
The only thing is that the inspector does not go out there and visually inspect each and every animal like he would if they were cattle or horses. Racehorses at county fairs, racehorses are no different than any other horse. They have to be inspected. Mm-hmm. No exemptions in that. Busiest time of the year is, you really can't say a year, but it starts October through the end of January. We do get a little short busy season after the first of the year. It varies with different sections of the state, because some of these ranchers they will hold part of their cattle over and sell them in the next year because of tax purposes. If they sold them this year, well, Uncle Sam would take too much. I mean, it's just good business.
Yeah.
Normal inspection, depend on the time of day. Well, only it has to be done in daylight hours.
It does.
Yeah. No artificial lights. No artificial light is not allowed. Far ahead, normally, you know, like in the busy season, a lot of times the rancher will say, like, he's got his calves contracted to a buyer, and the buyer says, well, or their contract may already spell out a delivery date, November 7th. Well, that rancher will usually try a couple of weeks ahead of time to say, hey, I need the inspector November 7th, and if the district man might already have a commitment for that day, but that gives him time to find another local inspector for somebody to fill in. So it's not unusual to find some ranchers that will call 10 days, 2 weeks ahead of time, and by the same token, you'll get other ranchers that'll say, hey, I need you 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. And we can just say, tough, I got somebody else to do at 7, but I'll get there as soon as I can, which might be 11. And then again, it might not, but... Oh, the silver coins, we pretty well covered that end of it. The changing brands. Well, there is no... The only way you counteract possible brand changes is mainly is do a good job of branding. And there again, it depends on... The other thing that you notice, I've got pictures that were taken 30s, 40s, things like that. But the rancher nowadays, they're trying to make their irons too small. Because they're getting... It's amazing the play that they're getting. They say, well, the tanning industry, the leather industry out here, which really started to boom with the urban cowboy craze back in the 60s and 70s, when they started selling leather goods to people other than ranchers and cowboys, when the hippies uptown started running around in leather jackets. Well, it got to... because a brand does destroy a certain amount of height, the leather industry started looking at that, and they've been kind of pushing for the livestock industry to find a different method of marking these animals to preserve the height. Well, for a rancher, it's got to be a benefit to him in direct proportion. You know, if he doesn't brand this animal, and say the packer is going to get $2 more for the hide, and if he passes that $2 back to the rancher, that means it's worth $2 more. But by the same token, if he loses that animal, and there's no brand there to bring that animal back home, he's out $700. It doesn't compute. They're working very hard at trying to come up with an electronic ID, but so far they have not come up with anything that comes close to replacing brand, a hot iron.
So everything, all the branding done in Montana now is still hot iron branding.
Now horses, they did change, this was due to some pressure from the horse industry. They wanted to just use freeze brands on horses. Now I can't understand why, like I said, somebody with the right bottle of Clairol and the right shoe polish can cover that brand up long enough to get that animal out. With a hot iron, it's a little bit harder to cover up, but there's still some controversy over that. But they wanted to be able to use freeze brands, so finally the board relented, and freeze brands are legal on horses, not for cattle. Myself, I still firm believer in the hot iron. We always refer to that brand as it's the cow's return address. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We picked up, well, just like out here, between Clancy and Jefferson City, there, for years, there's been a guy from over on the Townsend side been pasturing along the at a place close to the interstate, between Clancy and Jefferson. Brings in about 200 head for summer pasture and hauls them back in the fall. And this was, he did that for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, something like that. But then he quit. He got some other pasture off another direction, or I don't know, maybe there was something between him and the landowner out here. I don't know what the situation was. But for some reason or another, he changed and he was going to go to the White Sulphur area. Well, and Inspector Townsend wound up working his cattle over there, and doggone, they wound up with a stray that come out of this country over here. And those things happen, because a lot of times you're looking at these cattle, and we'll say like a snowstorm. This cow comes through, and you don't only look at the brand, you kind of look at the total animal. I mean, does this cow, you know, do they fit the entire herd? And it's amazing how you can take a cow from the neighbor, you can throw her in there, and if somebody is experienced, they can just about pick her out before they
check a brand.
Before you ever check a brand. But she comes through and she fits. I mean, all these cows are probably all black-white faces, and this cow's a black-white face, and she's branded in the same spot, and the whole nine yards. There's a 50-50 chance she might go, you know, under the right circumstance. Where if the light was a little different, the guy might see something extra that might say, whoa. But in situations, right, they do slip by. Brand inspectors make mistakes. God, I know. I've made enough of them myself. I mean, we're all only human.
Yeah.
But by the same token, we still return the value on the strays returned to owners. The dollar value of the strays returned to owners still is matching our total budget. So we're on a break-even point.
You can't say that about a lot of state agencies.
there again, you know, it just happens. Okay. The other crime, going down here. Kind of covered the changing brands. One of the worst, well, I can't say it's the worst, but it's the most prevalent type of rustling going on today is, and this is the right time of the year, we've got a lot of hunters out in the hills, is somebody will go out and they'll shoot a critter and take the hindquarters, or maybe even only one hindquarter, and throw it in the back of their truck, and they're gone. It's if the rancher discovers it soon enough, where there's still some evidence left around the crime scene, you've got a 50-50 chance of catching the perpetrator. Not in cases that I've necessarily been involved with, but in other cases I've worked with these other investigators. They run the full gamut. We've had one case where they got the perpetrator. Heck, it was 2 years after the case happened. It was kind of a dead-end deal. But finally, him and his girlfriend split up, and she got mad at him, and she squealed on him. Okay. I had another case over at Anaconda where, the whole critter was gone, and all there was the intro pile there. They were checking the area around there, and they kind of rolled the intros over, and here lay a matchbook with a phone number inside. Got that perpetrated. In the early 70s, we had a case down by Livingston. This is one of these shoot butcher type operations. And believe it or not, the guy was using a Cadillac. He had a Cadillac two-door with one of that big old trunks on it. And he'd drive up and down the road, and there's a bunch of cattle right close to the road, and he was picking out the bigger calves, the big dealers. Must have had a come along. Link that sucker of the 22, pull it on the fence, and load it, get it loaded in the trunk of that thing. He'd drive right into Livingston, into his garage, hang that sucker up. All the entrails, how they got started on him is the dam hides and the entrails started showing up in the Yellowstone River. That was the first they knew about it. Wasn't that a rancher was missing a lot of cattle or anything, because he'd only get one from this guy and one from that guy, but one day somebody was riding down along the river, or somebody went down to the river hunting or whatever, but probably found two or three hides in the river. That's, we got that guy. Time or right after hunting season at the time when that type of activity comes up.
What about this this trend of backing up a semi to some guy's field and just loading up with?
Well, that's what happened in the case of the dairy cattle. And there again, that's it used to be a little bit more of it, but people have gotten more cautious. They don't have unattended corrals here as much. They have a tendency to keep a closer watch on. But like the deal with the dairy cattle, the actual perpetrator, of course, now he wasn't the trucker, but the perpetrator, he'd been out and he had actually eyeballed these cattle and made like he was trying to buy them. And maybe he was, but the individual that owned them wasn't going to sell them. Well, a couple of days later, they all come up missing. And that's what happened. See, while he was in there trying to buy these cattle, he'd observed that, you know, they weren't right at the home place. They were off in another pasture. And there did happen to be a set of corrals there. But now you're getting more and more outfits that are using portable corrals. They move in and they, the ranchers, I mean, they set up a set of portable corrals. It's cheaper than building a set of corrals. You know, with the cost of lumber and everything nowadays, they're pretty expensive. You can take the same money and put it into a set of portable corrals and use it three or four different places. So that's had a very high point. Okay, possession of a running iron enough to hang a guy. Well, no, not really, but
certainly.
Yeah, in some places, well, like in Texas, I would say a third of their cattle down there are branded with running iron, so, just due to the type of operation. But in Montana, our law has read since day one that branding has to be done with a stamp iron made in the shape of the brand. But and there's a reason for that. It's because if you brand with a running iron, you know, each and every one there, of course, you can't brand a large number with a running iron anyhow, because the time that it takes to draw them brands on there is prohibitive. But even if you were a small operator and you only had like 10 animals or something, and you could not put that brand on each and every animal exactly the same. And you get a little careless, or your iron gets a little cool, And you are, what you're actually doing is creating a brand that is just right for some wrestler to pick up. So it's best to stay away from them. Ugly Montana weather. Well, we probably haven't had any experiences there that everybody else has had at one time or another. Usually on the road. Owly Ranchers. Well, there have been some instances. I haven't been directly involved with any of them myself. But usually, you know, a rancher, if you got an individual of that type, their reputation precedes them. And so you proceed on that premise, and you either don't travel there alone, or you make dang sure you can control the situation when you are there. But overall, I would say that... we had one of them instances in a year, it would be unusual. As far as irate ranchers, now there's been quite a few that are irate. But where I run across them are not your old-time rancher. It's usually an individual that has come into some money and bought a ranch and decided they were going to be a rancher. And haven't learned yet.
Without the experience.
Yeah, the newcomers that just come in and invest, they're probably the worst of the bunch. Because they come in here with a preconceived idea, you know, well, hell, it's open range, and it's old west, and everything else. It hasn't been that way for a long time, a long, long time. Rodeo stock are handled just like anybody else's. Although they do have annual inspections on these, where, you know, if you got a stock contractor, he's got his string of bucking horses and a string of bulls. They're inspected probably once, once a year. And there's a set time in there that they can move. But they're, and each animal is identified, the whole nine yards. And they get an annual inspection, which means that they can move from Rodeo and Helena to the Rodeo in Great Falls. Who we got for contractors? We used to have John Carpenter out of Kalispell. I'll just use him as an example. But he'd get the district man up there to inspect, because that's where he headquartered, to inspect all of his bulls and his horses and everything there. And Tom would write up a yearly permit for him, and then because Carpenter comes to Boulder and puts on that little rodeo and a lot of these smaller county type. And so he can haul those animals to those different rodeos.
Without
getting inspection every time. Because a lot of times, especially if you get we'll just say like the rodeo in Boulder doesn't get over with till say 6:30 in the evening or 7:30 in the evening. Sometimes it's even later than that. And in order for him to meet his next deadline, he has to load up that night and haul. It gets very inconvenient, because a lot of times you can't always do that.
That makes sense. It just sounds practical.
Yeah, it and there is an exception strictly for rodeo for that.
If I own a brand and I've registered it and I've re-registered it, and I still do that in the odd number year, right?
Yep, every 10-year period.
Okay. And I've had it in the family for three, four generations. I can sell that brand?
As long as it is, yeah. You're currently registered, it is classified the same as personal property in the state of Montana. Mm-hmm. You can sell that brand to whomever you wish that's got money enough to buy it. There are some of these brands now, and they're not necessarily historical, but that they're fairly simple brands. And I can't say that these people are actually getting these prices, but I have seen them advertised for as high as $5,000. Mm-hmm. Now that, I would not go out and pay $5,000 for any brand in the state of Montana when I can go up here and register one that's going to bring my cows home for $50. But some people, they just feel that they got to have this.
Is there a difference in price between the initial registration and the re-registration?
No.
It's going to be 50.
It's $50 no matter what. It used to be, when I first started getting, years ago, it was, I think it was $7.50. Then it went to 10, and then it went up to 25, and now it's up to 50. And that's probably where it's going to stay for some time.
What happens to a traditional Montana brand if it's not re-registered?
If it's not re-registered, here again, first thing, at the end of the re-record period, they get all the books cleaned up. They say, these brands have all been re-recorded, and there's a number of them have been transferred during, because they don't always get what we call re-recorded, because a lot of them will wait till the re-record year to transfer a brand, like maybe they're going to transfer it to their kids or something, so that the transfer itself in that year will renew the brand for the next 10 years, plus it also changes. Where if you re-record this brand, we'll just say it's in 1991, you re-record this brand, you spend $50. Next year you decide to add the wife to it. It costs you another $50. So what they do is they will try to pool all of this.
Smart guy loads up and
loads up and does it all the same year, gets it all done for one fee. But anyhow, the brand, maybe your grandfather had it and passed it down to your father and so on and so forth. And it's not unusual. I know of a number of brands that, well, Sankador's up there, Browning, has been in the same family since 1887 or 1888. Another one is that March brand. I don't know if you ever go out to Clancy. They got the brand on the barn, that Mission Cross. Mm-hmm. That's been in the March family since 1885.
So what happens if that's not redone?
Okay, if it's not re-recorded, the first thing they do is they have kind of an interim hold period here. They clean all the books out, and we can definitely say all of these things over here have been re-recorded, transferred, whatever. we've got this pool, and what they do is they print out a book on it. It, well, actually, it's a series of books. It'll be about 10 computer printout books, so thick and size of a printout sheet. Probably about 10 of them books. And then they'll go through there, and they will check these against what's currently recorded and see if there's any of them that should be removed because of conflicts. Okay, they come across the brand in there, they cross that sucker out, they go to a card file, they'll mark that so that that brand is not reissued. Because we know there's a statewide conflict. And then what's left over becomes available to anybody that wants to come in and record a brand. And they're set up, and these books are all set up in brand alphabetical order, like starts out with the A's, the AA's, AB's, AC's, so on and so forth down through, until you get to ZZ.
And then run the numbers.
And run the numbers. But the brand is read from left to right, top to bottom. So if you've got an A2, see, you'll go, your card file will start off with the A's, your lazy A's, so forth. Then you got the AA, AB, AC, on down to AZ, and then you immediately go into A1, A2, A3. Yeah. No one's rise, but there are some out there. But this is a manual process. They go down through there and check everything, and when they get them all checked, then they finally say, after such and such a date, we will start recording. Because you'll wind up with a month in there that they will not record a brand to anybody.
Is there
when you're looking at re-recording 45,000 brands, we re-record more brands in Montana than Colorado has total in their whole system.
Yeah.
Other than Texas. And Texas is hard to go by because they record their brands by county. And so you can have this brand in this county, and I can be in the next county and have the exact same brand on the exact same position. So who knows how many brands there is in Texas. But of the states that have statewide recording systems, we record more than any of them. In Colorado, the reason I say that, Colorado comes the closest of any of them. Idaho, they got less than 20,000. South Dakota is like 12,000 or something like that. You know, and we'll re-record 40 to 45,000. And by the end of the re-record period, we'll have on record 65,000. So, but if you own this brand, brand's recorded to you and you alone, and some guy comes along and says, well, I was at the office and seen that I was looking at a particular brand, and I find out that you own it. Would you sell it to me? Well, do you check with your conscience and say, well, if the price is right. If you agree on a price, on the reverse side of your brand certificate is an assignment form. Fill the sucker out, sign it, have your signature notarized, and you hand it to this guy, and he takes it up there and pays his $50 and gets transferred to him.
Is there anybody sitting around trying to buy up good old brands?
We did have an individual. This was in 1981 re-record. That he'd come up here, spent a little time, and I don't remember. I think they'd recorded like 20 different brands to him. And they kind of caught on, and because By the same token, we were getting other, some feedback from some other people and the board got in on this, and now you can only have recorded to you at any one time. Like I say, this guy had about 20 brands recorded to him, and he, as soon as he got them, he immediately put them up for sale. And right now, you can only have 3 brands, I'm thinking, unless you can show positive proof that you need more.
How would you do that?
You would have to prove that you were probably running 5 or 6 different bunches of cattle. You'll see it more in the sheep. There was an outfit that used to run a lot of sheep. They had like 20 different sheep brands. But they had, they branded each band with a different brand. And some of these bands were out under contract to people. And so that way, even though they get mixed up, they can sort them animals back out. But you have to show a need if you're wanting an excess number of brands. And it was, as a matter of fact, one of the brands that I've got right now, well, it was given to me back in the 70s. But one of our old inspectors picked it up. It was dropped, and he picked the thing up because it is, they, even in the 70s, they were not recording these particular type brands anymore. It's what they call a scattered brand. There's a cross on the ribs and an O on the hip. You brand 2 different positions. And they quit registering those kind of brands probably in the 40s or 50s. But he'd picked this brand up, or got it transferred to him, bought it or something, because he knew the individual that owned it, and the guy wasn't going to renew it because he was out of the cow business and didn't want it anymore. And so Bill got it from him, and Bill kept it up. Now, I don't think he ever put it on an animal. And then in early 70s, he got to looking at what brands he had, and I told him I'd like to have one of them 2 position brands, but they won't record one. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, he says, I'll just give you one. So that next time it rolls around, he says, that way I don't have to pay the re-recording. So he did. And I've used it limitedly, but as far as today, somebody coming in and grabbing up a bunch of them old ones. And, you know, of course, you always got to use a little common sense. There are we've got some people, there's, I think they've still got this, but in vigilante days, there was a guy by the name of Leroy Southmate, not a manic, and they had a Brandon S. I don't remember what position, but the last time I checked, there was a family individual in Virginia. They still owned the brand. And so where you got some historical and some family backup in there, you know, if we know they don't own any livestock, they aren't going to use it on anything. If by chance they failed to re-record it and came in 2 days later and said, damn, I forgot this, we're probably not going to tell them, hell no, you can't have it back. And there are some other brands that way. There's an M that belongs in the Milligan family that goes way back into the 1880s, and the individual that owns it now lives in St. Louis, the Milligan area between White Sulphur, that's named after this family. They keep it. It means more to them than anybody else, really.
And it's worth the $50 to
them. Oh, yeah. 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 To them kind of people, you know, where they're at and the money they're making, $50 every 10 years don't mean a whole lot.
If there were a local inspector, and he wanted to pick up some pretty, you know, important historical Montana brands, is that an ethical conflict for him to do that? Or is
well, it's probably not spelled out, because the only way he's going to acquire them is he is going to have to either purchase them, or he is going to have to go through the same process that anybody else on the street would go through. He wouldn't get any preferential treatment just because he was a local inspector. As a matter of fact, when you go through that brand recorder up there, she really, you know, if we have a brand inspector, and this happens every time you hire two or three new guys, they're looking, and they want a good horse brand, or something like that. And every time one of those applications come in, they get double scrutinized. But if he was to, say maybe he was to purchase them, they would not consider it unethical. Mm-hmm.
Even if he were purchasing them to sell again.
Yeah, if he bought them, you know, not a local inspector, although if he really got into it pretty heavy, the thing of it is the ranchers around are going to lean on him long before.
The offices.
Yeah. I mean, because they're probably going to be aware of it before we are, especially on a transfer. You know, where he buys them from. Maybe there's this little old widow woman has got a brand that, and she's getting up in years, and she sold the ranch and everything. She's just living in an apartment in town, and maybe he goes and contacts her and says, hey, I'd like to have that brand. And if she transfers it to him, well. When this individual in 81 was doing this, we did get a couple of calls on this. There was one from one lady. This is kind of how, why, I won't say it's the reason, but it was one of the blocks in there, building blocks. Was, this guy contacted her, and I don't remember how much money, but he paid her. I mean, she plumb agreed to it, sold him the brand and everything else. And about 6 weeks later, she found out that he'd resold this brand for a ton of money more. And that really irked her. We got quite a letter over that. And but the thing of it is he didn't do anything illegal. Went to her and he made her an offer she accepted, but the fact that a local inspector might be a little different, but if you had a salaried inspector that got into this, a salaried inspector, they would damn sure look at it as unethical. Now a local inspector, a local inspector can be a guy that we'll say he's down there at Townsend, maybe he's running 50 head of cows, and he drives the school bus in the winter time to help make a little extra money, and whatever, and he just happens to run across this. It's probably not quite so unethical in that situation. Because you take like our people where they work in the markets, they've got computer access to every brand is recorded in the state. At every one of the markets. Mm. And they'll say you've got unfair advantage. And he definitely would have.
Yeah. Hmm.
But, yeah, this, it could have happened, you know, up until, I would say, about the mid-80s. In there. But, I don't remember exactly what year it was the board passed the regulation regulating the number of brands that you could have on record.
And the board hasn't passed on llamas and alpacas, huh?
No, now there are... There again, they're like the bison. The law is there in place.
Mm.
And if the people ever decide that, hey, we've got a problem and we're going to start, because a lot of these people still, they don't even brand them.
Mm.
So how are you going to brand inspect? You know, there's, if they decide that, hey, we've got a problem, they're being stolen, trafficked in, whatever, all they got to do is petition the Department of Livestock and go in front of the board and state their case and say, we want you guys to start doing this, and I forget the exact procedure that they go through, but a certain percentage of the llama owners would sign a petition. Okay, next week we're inspecting llamas. Mm. Simple. Yeah.
And you guys would do that, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That wouldn't be a step down.
Well, a lot of them figure that even inspecting sheep is a step down, but... But sheep pay a big end of the bill, you know. Although,
What do you get per head for sheep?
I think it's 10 cents.
Hmm. You can run an awful lot of those past you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
To finish up, can you describe branding irons to me?